This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're focusing on employment law, and in particular, the legal rights and working conditions of domestic workers, including nannies, house cleaners, and home care attendants. My guests are Hina Shaw, Associate Professor of Law and the Director of Women's Employment Rights Clinic, Golden Gate University School of Law, and Lindsay Ime. Did I do that right?
Close.
I'm getting good. I'm getting Imai. That Imai Hong, Bay Area organizer, hand in hand the Domestic Employer Network, which is a national network. And in a little while, we'll give you our toll-free number, and you can call in. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization, the National Board of Trial Advocacy, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Lindsay and Hina, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much
great
for inviting
to have
us.
You here.
Thank you for having
Just
us.
Just great to have you here. Let's do this. Could you start, if you would, Lindsay, with the background of what we're talking about, the background at least of the organizations that we're going to be talking about?
Sure. I'm going to introduce Hand in Hand, and Hina will introduce Work. So Hand in Hand is the Domestic Employers Network. We're a national network made up of employers of nannies, house cleaners, and home care attendants, our families and allies, and we include people with disabilities and seniors who are working for dignified and respectful working conditions that benefit both the worker and the employer. And we do that to by supporting worker-led policy campaigns. We're going to talk about one recent one, SB 1015. We also do direct employer education, as well as engage in culture-shifting efforts, which I'll talk to you more about during the program.
Why don't you give your website at this point so that people have that?
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
It's just www.domesticemployers.org.
So it's one word, domesticemployers, that's a plural, .org. All
yes.
Right, www.domesticemployers.org. Are we going to then go to, at this point, the WIN?
We want to hear about Work first, and then we'll talk about
the
WIN.
You want to hear Work first.
Sure. My organization is called the Women's Employment Rights Clinic at Golden Gate University. We're a clinical teaching program at Golden Gate where law students take the clinic to gain practical legal experience. And so we're a student-run legal clinic that serves low-wage workers in the Bay Area. For the last 5 years, we've been the legal counsel to the California Domestic Workers Coalition, which is a coalition of grassroots domestic worker organizations and their allies in their effort to advance the rights of domestic workers in the Bay Area, in California. Mm-hmm. And so we've provided both technical and legal expertise on their campaign, as well as enforcement of existing and new rights that they've gained, and we do serve only employees in the Bay Area, but we are the technical legal experts in California. So workers throughout California who have questions about the new laws or existing rights of domestic workers can call our legal hotline. Our legal hotline number is 415-442-6647.
415-442-6647.
Yes.
You also, Hina, you also, your Women's Employment Rights Clinic have a booklet, which I've seen for the first time just a few minutes ago, which has a lot of very fine information in it, I believe. It's entitled Know Your Rights, and that's something that someone can call your number, your phone number, and get a copy?
Actually, I can give you the website where you can
Fine.
Get it. This is a booklet that the California Domestic Worker Coalition has put together for domestic workers to understand their legal rights in California. And it's a booklet that my clinic helped develop and write. And so the California Domestic Workers Coalition has a website called, and it's www.cadomesticworkers.org.
Mm-hmm.
And on that website, there are a lot of resources, including information that's contained in this booklet and also how to get a copy of this booklet.
All right. That's the basic information for people to put down. And what I want to do, everyone, wherever you are listening to the program, please, we have lots of information that you may find very helpful to you or someone close to you, particularly in a situation like this. If you are someone who is going to be in need of a domestic worker, or if you are the child of an older person who may need, for example, a home care attendant, please have a pen or pencil and piece of paper ready, because we are going to be giving information that you should jot down for the future. So where do we go from here?
We're going to talk Lindsay. About the recent victory.
Oh, the victory. All right, let's talk about the victory.
So in September, Governor Brown signed into law SB 1015, which makes permanent overtime rights for personal attendants. So those domestic workers who are employed in private homes, either as nannies or as caregivers, or another term for caregiving is home attendants or home mm-hmm. care attendants. Mm-hmm. So those domestic workers who are primarily either caring for a child or doing support for daily activities of living for seniors or people with disabilities. And it's significant. It makes permanent a law or a right that had been put into place actually in 2013 with AB 241, but that was a temporary law. And so now this is a permanent right for this class of domestic workers.
So that means essentially what? What does that mean?
It essentially means that if you work as a nanny, for example, and you work over 9 hours in a single day, then you are entitled to overtime pay, which is 1.5 times your hourly wage. And then after 45 hours in a week. But as Hina will explain, the federal law is stronger than that on weekly overtime.
So how does that work, Hina, please?
So an employer in California has to follow the law that has provides the greatest protection to employees. And that would be, you know, in California, with the recent passage of overtime for personal attendance, the overtime rights are for 9 hours and after 9 hours in a day and 45 hours in a week. But there was also a federal change in the law. In 2014, the Department of Labor adopted new regulations for home care attendants that greatly expanded federal overtime rights to home care attendants. And the federal overtime law is a weekly overtime law. So an employer who employs a home care attendant after 40 hours must pay overtime at time and a half.
So, in other words, we have a situation where how does the employer, and that's the person who's getting the service, how does the employer actually get or know about what the employer's obligations are, let alone the employee? And the employee, as you're talking about, is a domestic worker. How do either of them know what the story is and what the law requires?
Well, one thing to know is that the law has had a massive transformation in the last few years for this segment of the population. And so there has been a lot of flux. But now there has been some clarity as to what the law is. And there's a couple of places that workers can go to and employers can go to. So, for example, if you're a domestic worker employer, Lindsay's organization, Hand in Hand, is a fabulous resource to understand what the parameters of the law requires. Similarly, for workers, the California Domestic Workers Coalition in California and then the National Domestic Workers Alliance on a national level are really excellent resources for workers. There's lots of Know Your Rights booklet. The Know Your Rights booklet is online. There's also frequently asked questions for workers to look at. And there are also a good handout for employers also to know what their rights are. In addition, both the federal and the state laws are enforced by enforcement agencies that have very good resources. In California, the enforcement agencies, the Division of Labor Standards Enforcement, it's often called the Labor Commissioner, mm-hmm. and they have a website. On their website, they have a lot of information, including frequently asked questions for domestic workers.
Again, that's the Division of Labor Standards Enforcement
yeah.
Office, or the Labor Commissioner's governor's office.
Exactly. And then for the federal law, the Department of Labor also has some very good
federal
resources.
Federal Department of Labor.
Yeah, the Federal Department
of Labor.
And
people can Google both of these and find them.
Absolutely.
I think it's very important. You are both have a great deal of information to give, and I think what's very important here is there's so much coming at people. I mean, this is the first time I've done a program on the laws and working conditions of domestic workers. And I've been doing this program for 32 years. So the listeners have, unless they are employing someone and have dealt with what the law requires, probably are novices in this area also. So let me do this, everyone. If you're ready to write again, let me give you the Hand in Hand, the Domestic Employers Network. Let me give you that website again, www.domesticemployers, that's plural, employer.org. And then for the Women's Employment Rights Clinic, who is the director, Hina Shaw is the director, and that number, if you want to get in touch with her, wherever you may be, or in touch with the office, wherever you may be in the state, certainly in the state of California, is 415-442-6647, 415-442-6647, to get references. If you need to get some direction of where to go, what to do, how you can get a booklet or whatever, both of the website and the phone number are going to be very helpful to you. So the WIN is very important, but it doesn't cover everyone, does it?
Well, the WIN actually does cover almost all domestic workers, but there are certain domestic workers that are still excluded under the law. And so in California, and again, depending on what law you're looking at, there's different exclusions. So, for example, under California law now, there are a few workers that are excluded. Personal attendants who provide domestic services through the in-home support services are excluded under the California law.
Now, what's in-support services? Why is that? What's the distinction there?
The in-home support service program is a program that is state subsidized. So
I see.
State provides provides the funding, and you know. That's part of – they were carved out of the original 2013 law extending overtime to personal attendants. However, those workers, the in-home support service workers, will be covered under the federal law.
Mm-hmm.
They're not excluded under the federal law. There are other personal attendants who are also receiving funding through some state subsidies that will also be excluded. But again, if they're excluded under the California law, it's very likely that they will be covered under the federal law.
Which means what? Can you give us a simple example if someone is excluded under the California law but not under the federal law? Do you have a simple example you can give
Absolutely.
Us?
Absolutely. So say you're a personal attendant
that's
being paid through the in-home support services program. You will not be entitled to the daily overtime rights that California has, but you will be entitled to overtime after 40 hours in a week under the federal law. Yes.
I see. So is there in California, for example, is there and I know different cities, different counties have different ordinances with respect to what is the minimum wage, et cetera. What is California's minimum wage for domestic workers, or at least a number of these domestic workers?
For all workers, the minimum wage in California is $10 per hour.
Okay. All right. And what about under federal law? Is there a federal law of a minimum wage?
Yeah, there is a federal minimum wage. It's $7.25 an hour. However, for California employers, they're going to need to comply with the California or their local municipality's minimum wage ordinance.
Whichever is higher.
Whichever
right?
is higher. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. There has been then this movement to change the law. Why is there this movement, Lindsay, to change the law?
Well, sure. I think Hina was going to share a little bit more about the history of domestic work, but
Maybe you can talk a little bit about the exclusions.
You're
just as familiar.
Sure. No, I can do that. Looking back at labor law and when it was created, looking back at the 1930s when basic federal labor law was established around minimum wage and overtime, there were two groups of workers that were left out of that law. One was farm workers and one was domestic workers. And that's really based in our history of slavery in this country. When labor laws were trying to be established in order to get the support of lawmakers of the South, those two groups of workers were left out to mainly preserve a way of life in the South in which former slaves were doing the bulk of domestic work and farm work. Fast forward to today, we now have sort of a patchwork of laws. And as Hina mentioned, there was this recent expansion also back in 2013 where many of those people doing caregiving or home care work were re-included under federal overtime and minimum wage. Do you want to say more about the exclusions?
You know, and in addition to the exclusion, the exclusions were just not on the federal level. So they were, you know, de facto excluded from the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is the federal law that governs wage and hour. But in California, domestic workers didn't get the protection of basic wage and hour laws until 1976. Mm-hmm. And when they did get protections in 1976, a group of workers, the personal attendants that we were talking about, and these are nannies, caregivers who spent a significant amount of time providing caregiving services in the home were absolutely excluded, and they were excluded from even basic minimum wage laws. And there was a misconception in the 1970s in California when the legislature was – when the Industrial Welfare Commission was adopting these new rules that this type of work that was really being done by elderly people and teenagers who really didn't need the money. But even in the 1970s, there was ample evidence that the workers who were performing domestic services, personal attendant services, were oftentimes they were predominantly women. They were women of color, and they were heads of households. They were doing this to earn a living for their families. And it's taken a really long time in California and in the national sphere to rectify these basic exclusions from basic fundamental rights.
So this movement has been fueled by the need by workers to not only have a recognition as real work, domestic work being real work, but also the pay and the benefits that come along with real work, given that, as Hina mentioned, many and most domestic workers are the primary or one of the primary breadwinners for their families. So we have now a modern-day domestic worker movement that is led by workers, both at the national level and local level and international level, fighting for basic labor rights. And that's where kind of our work is rooted in. Hand in Hand, for example, got started because it became really clear that having domestic employers talking alongside domestic workers to lawmakers about the importance of domestic work would help move campaigns forward. New York saw the first major victory with a New York Domestic Worker Bill of Rights there back in the 2000s, early 2000s, and then here in California as well. And it makes sense. I mean, look at my example. I hired and employed a nanny for almost 5 years, the same woman, an amazing person. Her name's Jessica. And who knew better the value of her work than me? She taught me so much about what it means to be a good parent. She showed me, you know, answered so many questions that I had. She herself not only was an amazing caregiver, but she was a parent, a mother herself. And not only that, but she provided our family with so much stability and peace of mind so that both me and my husband could go back to work knowing full well that our children were in capable hands. And so while there is certainly exploitation and abuse that exists in this industry, so many of us as domestic employers recognize and understand fundamentally the value of domestic work. And Hand in Hand got started in order to bring employers into this movement to help stand side by side with workers who are asking for those basic labor protections.
One of the things that I was aware of also, besides nannies and home care attendants, is house cleaners. How do house cleaners come into this situation? I mean, house cleaners may be people who are coming in once a week or maybe every other week or whatever. How are they handled, Hina, with regard to this?
Well, the irony is that when California started regulating the household occupations, house cleaners had full rights. They house cleaners were given the full standard minimum wage and overtime that other workers had. Mm. And the irony is that we were treating people who cared for our things better than we were treating workers who were caring for our loved ones. And so house cleaners have always had overtime rights. There is some differences for live-in and live-out workers. So there are slightly different overtime rules if a worker who is not a personal attendant is a live-in. So if you happen to, you know, have a big mansion and have a live-in house cleaner, there are some slightly different overtime rules that apply in your situation than if the house cleaner was someone who just came in on a weekly basis or didn't live in your household.
Let me come back to you, Lindsay, for just a moment. Hand in Hand, as I understand it, is a national network. Mm-hmm. Does that mean if someone is listening to the program, certainly I know because we are on the NPR satellite, we have a station in Hawaii that listens to the program. Does that mean if someone is listening to us that Hand in Hand is something that person in Hawaii can contact, either contact you or you could refer them? In other words,
right.
Hand in Hand really is national.
That's right. We have local chapters only in the Bay Area and in New York. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to change that and grow. But we are a national network. Our website has information and answers that are relevant to employers anywhere. We really focus on supporting employers to build mutually respectful working relationships with the people that they employ. And if they have more technical or legal questions, we'd be happy to refer them to resources.
For those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about the legal rights and working conditions of domestic workers, nannies, house cleaners, and home care attendants. My guests are Hina Shaw, Associate Professor of Law and the Director of the Women's Employment Rights Clinic at Golden Gate University School of Law. You might want to jot down this number for further reference, 415-442-6647. My other guest is Lindsay Imai Hong, Bay Area organizer, Hand in Hand, the Domestic Employer Network, which is a national network. And the website there is www.domesticemployers.org, www.domesticemployers.org. And for those of you who are listening to the program live, and we are doing this on Wednesday, November 9th, in a few minutes I'll be giving you our toll-free call-in number. Also, let me alert you for in case you are available on November 16th, we're going to do a program on year-end tax issues to try to help you reduce your 2016 taxes, believe it or not. We'll also have a call of CPA enrolled agent evening on November 16th, and you might want to jot down that number. Whether you listen to the program live or not, you're welcome to call in. We'll be on the air, of course, on November 16th at 7 p.m. And for call a CPA enrolled agent, it's 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. We are getting close to about just a few minutes left in the statewide version of the program. What have we not talked about that you would like the listeners in at least the statewide version, which is a half an hour version, to know about?
I also want to talk a little bit about what constitutes hours worked, especially if employers are hiring live-in workers or workers who work a 24-hour shift. In California, and especially the laws that govern household occupation, so the domestic workers, the definition of hours worked is any time the employee is under the control of the employer. Mm-hmm. That is considered time worked. So if you're hiring someone for a live-in shift or a 24-hour shift, if that employee is not free to leave the premises and is required to be on site and supervising a child or an elderly person or a person with disabilities, all of that time is considered compensable time.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a misconception, especially for a 24-hour shift worker, that an employer is allowed to deduct sleep. Under California law.
No, wait a minute. An employer is allowed to do what?
Deduct or take away sleep hours and not pay for sleep hours.
Okay.
And that's a misconception under the California law. And under California, employers are required to pay for all hours worked for domestic workers, including domestic workers who are working a 24-hour shift. Even if they're in that 24-hour shift allowed to sleep, if they're not free to leave the premises and go home to their own house to take a nap, if they're required to be on the premises providing 24-hour supervision, then they're required to be paid for all of that time.
And that would include for all of that time, that would include overtime.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which is time and a half, I presume.
Time and a half after 9 hours.
I see.
It can get very expensive. And I think there is a misconception in California that an employer doesn't have to pay for sleep time. But under California law, they are required to pay for sleep time.
That's very interesting. But it makes sense. It certainly makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, there are ways that for an employer that needs 24-hour care, it can get very costly to hire only one employee for that shift. And there are ways to schedule shifts that provide continuity of care but also reduces your overtime burden. And it's both necessary for workers. A worker is fatigued oftentimes if they're working that many shifts and not going home. And so an employer should really an employer who needs 24-hour care or needs a family member that needs 24-hour care should really think about creating a scheduling system that provides continuity of care and that also spreads those hours.
We're just about ending with the statewide version, but finish. You've got about 20 seconds.
Sure, no problem. I was just going to say that the employer should really think deeply about how to meet those 24 hours through hiring additional workers to both spread the hours to over 2 workers or sometimes 3 workers, depending on the continuity of care that's needed. But that's one area that our clinic sees a lot of.
All right. This is your legal rights. Let me give you the toll-free number. If you are someone who would be an employer or if you're an employee as a domestic worker or you're the employer of a domestic worker, please join us with your question, your comment, your concern if you have one. Toll-free 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. Pardon me. And if you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Every county in California has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They will do their best to find someone who's experienced, that is an attorney, who's experienced in the area of law that you're having the problem with. With minor exception, for a half an hour consultation, you will pay $25 to $35. It's a great investment to give you a basic understanding of what your rights and obligations may be. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And so for those of you who are listening to the live program, and we are doing this on Wednesday evening, November 9th, it's 866-798-8255, toll-free 866-798-8255. Don't be bashful. Join us if you will, because I think if you have a question, probably you reflect, or your question probably is something that other people have the same problem with, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And I want to tell you a couple of announcements before we take any calls. Tomorrow, by the way, as you may know, November 11th, in a couple of days from now, is National Veterans Day. Tomorrow, November 10th, you're invited, if you're in the Bay Area, to join California Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones and San Francisco Supervisor Kathy Tang to celebrate Veterans Day and launch the San Francisco Veterans Benefits Protection Project. We talked about this just last week. And this is a coalition which fights pension poaching scams targeting elder veterans by educating veterans, survivors, and professionals about where to turn for help. And so you are invited to this. It will be in San Francisco Thursday, November 10th at 1 p.m. That's tomorrow. It'll be on the City Hall steps, San Francisco City Hall steps. So if this is something that you are interested in, it's tomorrow, November 10th, 1 p.m. at San Francisco City Hall. The other thing that I'd like you to know about, and this is about 10 days from now, actually, not quite 10, it's actually 9 days from now. The San Mateo County Law Library is going to have a noontime lecture on post-death administration, basics of handling affairs when a loved one passes. It's presented by estate planning attorney Alma Songi Beck, who's been a guest on my program before. The lecture is free. It's open to you. If you're in the Bay Area, it'll be from noon to 1 p.m. at the San Mateo County Law Library in Redwood City. That's Thursday, November 17th. Noon to 1. If you'd like some more information, it's 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. And nobody's calling us yet. So I don't know. Maybe we lulled them to sleep. So let me give you our toll-free number again with respect to our topic, which is the legal rights and working conditions of domestic workers, nannies, house cleaners, and home care attendants. It's 866-798-8255. My guests are both very knowledgeable about this. Lindsay Imai Hung, Bay Area organizer, Hand in Hand, the Domestic Employers Network, which is a national network. The website is www.domesticemployers.org. My other guest is Hina Shaw, Associate Professor of Law and the Director of the Women's Employment Rights Clinic, Golden Gate University School of Law. That number for the clinic is 415-442-6647, 415-442-6647. Well, we have one person who's calling, and we'll get to that person in a minute. Here we have a question that's been brought into the studio. For domestic workers who work a 24-hour shift, can the employer can room and board be deducted?
From pay. There is a credit towards the minimum wage in California for room and lodging. And this is for live-in workers, not necessarily for someone who works just a 24-hour shift. Mm-hmm. So if you have a live-in worker, someone who's living there permanently or for more than five days a week, then an employer can take a credit towards the minimum wage for providing the lodging or any meals that they do provide. But there are strict guidelines for how much an employer charges, and that's on the website of the California Labor Commissioner's Office, as well as the Know Your Rights materials that are on the California Domestic Workers website. It's tied to the minimum wage, so there's a mandated amount that they can take, and it's a very small amount that they can take a credit towards the minimum wage. And there's got to be a voluntary written agreement between the employer and the employee before.
So it has to be in writing, not a verbal.
Yeah, it has to be a written agreement, and it has to be voluntary.
Let me give you the website again for the California Domestic Workers Coalition. It's www.cadomesticworkers.org. Domestic workers is one word. www.cadomesticworkers.org. All right, we're going to start with Susan. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Hi, Susan. Hello.
Hi, thank you for
taking. Oh, boy.
Oh,
I can...
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call. Hello?
Yes, I can barely hear you, Susan. I don't know what's wrong.
I'm driving.
Oh, that's what's wrong. All right. Very quickly, what is your question, if you would?
Well, I work with someone who has domestic workers through the in-home support services program and also the in-home operations program. They're both state-run programs. And they both have workers that are not paid overtime. They're always paid the same amount. They're paid as independent contractors. And they don't get any overtime. And this is a state-run program. So I don't understand why the state is breaking its own
All right. Let me get some comments for you, Susan. Turn your radio back up. Unfortunately, the clarity of your call was not good, but I think I certainly heard you. I think my guests heard you, and I hope the audience heard you. What comments do you have for Susan about this? She's saying this is a statewide program. How can the statewide program, how can the state get away with not actually paying overtime?
I'm not, you know, there are different permutations, and not knowing all of the facts, I can't comment on that specific situation.
See.
But I can say that, there is a lot of misclassification of workers where an employer treats a worker as an independent contractor. And in California, the law really looks at how much control the employer has over the employee's working conditions, pay, hours. And if the employee is controlled, if the pay is set by the employer, the hours are set by the employer, and the employer controls the working conditions, that person's going to be an employee, not an independent contractor.
Where can Susan go at this point? Obviously, she's confused by what we've been talking about and what she's aware of. Where can she go, or whomever she may be speaking on behalf of, to get more specifics on this?
What I would encourage her to do is to have the person who's experiencing this problem call our hotline at 415-442-6647. At a minimum, we can do a quick assessment and see if we can refer them to an attorney that might be able to help them. But I encourage, normally what we encourage is that the employee that's experiencing the problem to call us directly.
Okay.
Can I say a little bit more about IHSS, In-Home
Lindsay.
Supportive Services? So that is, as Hina mentioned earlier, it's a state-run program. It's Medicaid-funded, so it's home care for very, very low-income seniors and people with disabilities. The recent bill that was passed, SB 1015, which establishes permanent daily overtime for caregivers, personal attendants, who are privately paid, does not apply to IHSS workers.
Mm-hmm.
So IHSS workers do not have the right to daily overtime. However, they are covered under federal overtime, which kicks in after 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
So if those workers are working more than 40 hours a week, they should be paid time and a half.
Under the federal law.
Under the federal, any hours worked beyond 40 hours in 1 week.
So if someone is an employee, is a worker and is under the home care services.
In-home supportive services,
In-home support services umbrella, and is working more than 40 hours a week, and under the federal law is entitled to overtime. Are you suggesting that that person may want to contact or may want to look at the federal labor offices Department of Labor, website to get some information?
They can certainly do that, and they can also, call for a consult. If they feel like they're not being paid properly, they can certainly call for a consultation with a lawyer, and they can call our office, and we can refer them to, if we can't handle the case, we can certainly refer them.
When you say for a consultation, now, is lawyers don't give away their time.
Well, we are a nonprofit clinical program, and so all consultations, when a worker calls our office for a consultation or to say, well, I think my rights are being violated, that consultation is free. We don't charge.
That's wonderful. So can that consultation be over the phone, or does it need to be person to person?
Yeah, so the way our hotline works is that the student will be able to do a general intake on the phone to kind of assess what the situation is. If we feel that it's a situation that we can actually provide legal representation on, then the worker would come in to discuss the scope of the representation. We don't take new cases during the winter break and in the summer break. We are on a semester schedule with the students. Mm-hmm. However, workers who have problems can certainly call our hotline number, and we'll at least guide them to other legal services in the Bay Area or wherever. We do have a vast referral list of nonprofits who work with domestic workers throughout the state of California. So a worker who's going to call us in the say in December, we certainly...
In December, you're saying?
If let's say I get a call in December from a worker.
Okay.
What we will most likely do is assess what the situation is and try to give them a referral to another nonprofit that might be able to provide representation.
I see. Okay.
Certainly during the school semester, we will assess the cases to see if there's anything that we can do to assist that worker.
Well, let me give the phone number again for the Women's Employment Rights Clinic that Hina Shaw is the director of, and that is 415-442-6647. If you have any questions, any concerns, whether you are an employer, whether you are a domestic worker, the toll-free number if you'd like to call in. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, November 9th, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255 if you would like to call in. I do want to alert you that if you do think you might have a question, don't wait until another 10 minutes from now, because we'll nearly be over. So we've got Sheila. Welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment for everybody concerned. I don't know about the in-home operations program. I'm not familiar with it, but I am an IHSS recipient, and I may get a lot of crap back from the community for this, but the in-home supported services program does not allow us, the employers of record, to control an employee's hours that we are allowed to give them. Let me back up. So a person with IHSS can have as many employees as they need to fill all the hours that they are allocated by the state and the county, but we can tell our worker what time we'd like them to arrive and such, but we don't have control over how much they are paid, and we do not have control over how many hours we are allocated. We have control, if we have more than one worker, over whether they get all the hours or only part, or and how those hours are allocated. And I guess if we have one worker, we cannot give them all the hours, but that's kind of silly, so one of the things that has frustrated me about all this is I am considered the employer of record, and when an IHSS worker has a problem, for example, with an income tax or something, I get letters from the IRS that scare the heck out of me because I'm not sure what they're for, that are telling me, you know, that this person might be doing, I can't even follow it, but I'm getting these letters because I'm the employer of record, but I don't really have any control. And so I guess the thing that I'm saying is, it is frustrating for us as IHSS recipients. We want to do right by our workers, but there's not much we can do. We don't control their wages. We control how many hours they get, sort of, but not really. And what we control is, when do you arrive? When do you go home? And if someone's going to work for me for a bunch of hours and they look tired, I go, look, take a break. You know, I can control that.
Let me do this, Sheila. Let me get some comments for you to see if we can get some feedback for you with respect to what you presented. If you turn your radio back up, thank you very much for calling. What comments, you know, if you would start with this, what comments do you have for Sheila?
So in California, what Sheila just described would make her an employer. But there has been some good law that has found that the state of California, the county actually, the IHSS, pair to be joint employers. So the state or county, the IHSS program will be considered a joint employer of the worker and be equally liable when there's any violations of the law.
So what does it sounds to me, and of course I don't have any background in this area. It sounds to me that Sheila is somewhat not sure of what the situation is. Who can she get some good input from, so that she knows what the situation is, or is there someone?
Well, I think what her question is really geared towards, or what I understand her question to be, is why is she considered the employer?
Yes.
But the definition of an employer under California law is very broad, mm-hmm. and it would encompass kind of the things that Sheila was describing, the control over how the means and manner of the work. Mm-hmm. And so she would be considered a joint employer. I understand her frustration because she's dealing with a state program, that there are some restrictions on how they get to allocate the hours, or how to even determine the pay. But I think fundamentally under the law, she would be the employer. And I think this is true for household employers or householders who are hiring workers even through a private agency, to understand that they would also be liable if there's been violations, because the law in California of who is considered an employer is very broad.
Now, she's saying she's getting these letters from the IRS. What comments do you have with respect to that?
You know, I'm not a tax expert, and so my suggestion is for her to contact the county or the IHSS caseworker to figure out what's going on.
And would there be someone in her county? I think Sheila is in Alameda County. Would there be someone in Alameda County?
Yeah, I think she's whichever IHSS county program that she's dealing with, she should talk to the caseworker.
So that would be probably Googling Alameda County, and
I think she'll know who that is.
Yeah, I believe that.
If you believe you, what?
Well, if you are my understanding, and I'm also not an expert on IHSS, but my understanding is that if you are a recipient of IHSS, if you receive your home mm-hmm. care support through IHSS, that you have a caseworker, or essentially a contact within the public authority, the county based.
I see.
Organization.
So she needs to call her local office for ISS.
Yeah, and without having kind of intimate knowledge of it, I know there are a lot of challenges, particularly related to timesheets and reporting and getting paid on time. So I think some of the frustrations that Sheila expressed are not particular to Sheila, but actually are reflective of broader just challenges with the system overall. But I really appreciate her calling in.
Good luck to you, Sheila, on that. Alan, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Mine is sort of a sideways comment, in that my girlfriend is a Filipina who's been here for 2 years, has a green card, and has been working at a assisted living for people with disabilities, emotional and physical disabilities. But because of chaos there, she is leaving there, and it's been referred to an agency who is run by a Filipino, where he pays people under the table and does not pay overtime, even though they're there 24 hours.
Oh, my.
And apparently, from what she tells me, this is very, very common in the immigrant community.
Mm-hmm.
And something needs to be done about that, because that's really very exploitive. They get paid sort of reasonable, $130 for 24 hours, but that's not even the minimum wage.
Yeah.
So
let me get some comments for you. Your girlfriend is still working through this particular person's office, is that right?
No. She's not yet working there, but she has been referred by a friend of hers, who is also a Filipina, to go there, and he'll get you some work.
Yeah, but it's under the table, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me get some comments for you, Alan. Hopefully that will be something helpful for your girlfriend. Thank you for calling. What comments do either of you have with respect to Alan's concern about his girlfriend?
So I think we have to define what paying under the table means. You know, cash payments in California are not illegal. You can pay someone in cash as long as you're reporting that cash payment and paying taxes on it and certainly complying with whatever applicable overtime laws that apply to that
situation.
Doesn't
sound like this fellow's doing that, though.
Right. And certainly if this worker is working a 24-hour shift and required to be on the clock for the full 24 hours, then the daily rate doesn't sound like it's complying with even minimum wage. There's a couple, you know, if she, if the worker is experiencing this problem and they're in the Bay Area and they want a consultation, they can certainly call our hotline number. And the other thing is that I think there is some misconception that this kind of violations happen only to workers who don't have the proper papers or are working in immigrant communities. But what we've really found is that, you know, exploitation is an equal opportunity kind of job.
Yeah.
And there are lots of employers who, like Lindsay, who do the right thing, who want to go above and beyond what the minimum requirements are under the law. But there's still plenty of people who violate the law, knowingly violate the law, and exploit workers. And what we want to let workers know is, one, I think the California Domestic Workers Coalition is a fabulous resource for workers who want to organize, who want to become empowered about enforcing their workplace rights. There are some really excellent local organizations, including those that work in the Filipino community. In San Francisco, there's the Filipino Community Center, and in the East Bay, there's the Filipino Advocates for Justice. Fabulous, fabulous member organizations that work with the Filipino community, and for workers who want to find a place to be supported as they try to navigate what their rights are and to be supported in the exercising of those rights. So I encourage all workers to reach out to the California Domestic Workers Coalition, as well as all employers who want to do the right thing and who really want to go above and beyond what the minimum requirements are of the law. I encourage them to contact Lindsay at Hand in Hand.
Alan, let me give you the website for the California Domestic Workers Coalition. I've given it before. I hope you have something to write with. www.cadomesticworkers.org. CA Domestic Workers is all one word, believe it or not. www.cadomesticworkers.org. The other number, the phone number, which is the phone number for the Women's Employment Rights Clinic that Tina Shaw was just talking about, if you want to jot this down to get some at least initial consultation, is 415-442-6647, 415-442-6647. This is the way to do it. And go ahead, Lindsay, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I do. Just to piggyback on Hina's comments about employers wanting to do the right thing, while Hand in Hand got started as a workers' rights organization made up of employers, we soon found that employers didn't have a lot of guidance. Like I mentioned, when I became a mother and became a nanny employer, no one handed me, you know, a handbook on how to be an employer, and there's no HR department that employers can turn to. And so one of the things that Hand in Hand tries to do is provide resources for employers on how to do just that. Both follow the law, but go above and beyond the law, because we know the law is inadequate at this stage. And a lot of our work is helping employers to see themselves as employers, because many of us do start as employers, maybe needing a little extra help in the home here or there, and then it starts to add up, and pretty soon you have someone working for you full time. And even if it's not full time work, if it's regular work, you are an employer. And one of the tools that we have is something called the Fair Care Pledge. And what that is, it's a voluntary commitment that we invite all domestic employers to sign on to, and essentially says that I'm pledging to be a fair employer. I'm going to pay a fair wage. I'm going to provide paid time off, and I'm going to provide clear expectations. These are the basic fundamentals that we've heard from workers themselves. And we're hoping that if enough employers sign on to this, that we'll have kind of a high road industry standard that goes above and beyond the law that we have
Lindsay,
today.
Would you suggest to Alan that he have his girlfriend call or get in touch with your website, www.domesticemployer.org? Would that be helpful also?
Or? Certainly. Also, I think, you know, it sounds like the employer that they're referring to could use a conversation about being unfair. But I did want to also say that it does, you know, that employment practices really span all, you know, the whole spectrum, and it really is regardless of race. So I'd be careful to say that it was certain communities that are exploiting.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We have one more call that I think we can take. Michelle, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes. I'm calling because it sounds like you're possibly a good resource to find. A friend of mine needs a nanny three times a week for 3 to 4 hours down in San Jose. Where does she go to find someone who is qualified and reputable and can trust her children with?
You have some thoughts on
sure.
that one, Lindsay,
yeah.
please?
So that's a great question. We most of our work is based in the East Bay and San Francisco, and so we have quite a few resources there. But I would say for San Jose, there's a couple of ways in which we recommend families look for qualified nannies. One is just word of mouth through your own personal networks.
Sure.
The second is there's a lot of neighborhood listservs, next door, for example. Or Yahoo or Google groups that are parent groups, often started because parents start coming together when they first give birth. Also, there's companies that essentially act as matchmaking companies. One is called Care.com. There's also
Care.com, C-A-R-E.com. Mm-hmm,
Care.com okay. and City Sitter, Urban Sitter. There's quite a few out there, and those are places that sort of like online dating services, you're able to see a profile of a nanny or another mm-hmm. domestic worker. And in terms of being able to trust the nanny, I know that's a question that comes up quite a bit for families. We really encourage you to check references, to talk with the families who've employed them in the past, and just spend some time with them, with your child. Get to know them.
With the worker.
With the worker, exactly. Yeah. With the worker. See how they are with their with your child, how your child reacts to them. And then, you know, do a trial period where you are perhaps dropping in that first week or two. But we really think that those are the best ways to get to know whether someone's trustworthy. There are also background check, kind of background verification sources that exist. Care.com offers one. There's something called Trustline. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we really think that getting to know the worker and checking their references is the best way.
I want to thank you both very much for joining us. It's been great to have you on the program. Hina Shaw, Associate Professor of Law and the Director of the Women's Employment Rights Clinic, Golden Gate University School of Law. Thanks so much.
This was a pleasure. Thank you.
And Lindsay Emai. Got it right, huh, Hong? Bay Area organizer, hand in hand, the Domestic Employers Network. Thank you very much for joining us. Next time on Your Legal Rights, our program will be on the topic of year-end income tax tips for 2016. Sorry to give you that word, although it may be helpful to you. My guest will be David Hellman, a certified specialist in taxation law. He's also a CPA. And if you listen to the live program on Wednesday, November 16th, starting at 7 p.m. Pacific time, we'll also have a Call a CPA Enrolled Agent night for listeners to ask tax questions by calling 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made available by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is provided by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.